Hey, good morning, everyone. How are we doing today? Hey, we're going to start things off here with a little bit of music from Joe, the Boys of the Road Crew. And then we're going to share a little bit of stories on murder and mayhem on Route 66.
Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Not exactly good upbeat holiday stories, but you get a lot of inquiries, a lot of people question stories about Route 66, and there's a certain morbid curiosity, I suppose, about dark deeds along Route 66. This morning, I want to talk to you a little bit about Budville. Budville is located on Route 66, west of Albuquerque, New Mexico. If you blink, you'll miss Budville. It's located a few miles west of Laguna. It really never amounted to more than a garage, service station, and a store complex with a roadhouse across the highway, the Dixie Tavern and Cafe. And even during the glory days of Route 66, it was never much more than a wide spot in the road. The namesake of Budville was H.N. Bud Rice. He established a service center and trading post there in 1928. And in the years that follow, he and his wife Flossie, they carved out small empire built on the woes of desperate travelers and the levying of fines for speeding or trumped up charges of reckless driving. His Rice was also the justice of the peace. Additionally, he sold bus tickets and operated the local state motor vehicle department concession. And by 1950, with the only available towing service between the Rio Puerco River and Grants, the couple's prosperity was assured. Local legend has it that Rice often joked about being the law west of Rio Puerco, and that he wasn't known for scruples. On the evening of November 18, 1967, Rice was preparing to close the trading post for the day. With him were his wife Flossie, Blanche Brown, an 82-year-old retired school teacher who worked part-time at the post, and another employee. A last-minute customer stepped into the store, brandished a gun, and announced that he was there for the money. Details are a bit sketchy, but when the gunman ran for the door, Flossie Rice ran screaming through the rear entrance, and the employee hid in the restroom. And Bud Rice and Brown were lying dead on the floor. Now, as coincidence would have it, a driver behind the wheel of a Continental Trailways bus arrived at Budville in time to see a small pickup truck pull onto the roadway from the trading post parking lot at high speed and head east toward Albuquerque. The bus driver, Cody Mills, noted in later testimony the truck was a 46 or 47 Ford, dark blue or black, except for the right door and right front fender, which were light-colored. He did not see a license plate, but recalled that the truck had one taillight, and as there were no passengers standing under the bus depot sign, he continued to his destination rather than stop. He later recalled that the trading post and station were dark inside and out, except for the two gas pump globes. And he didn't pay much attention to it, but later noted that that was an unusual occurrence, as Rice usually stayed open until 8 o'clock. The man Flossie identified as the murderer turned out to be a young sailor, Larry Bunton, who was hitchhiking west, but positive identification placed the man miles from the crime scene led to his release. Several years later, three men arrested in Albuquerque offered details about the Budville murder in the hope of leniency. They fingered Billy White, a drifter with a record of petty crimes. After his arrest, White stood trial for the murders, but the jury returned a verdict of not guilty, and the case remains unsolved. In an interesting twist, White was later arrested and convicted of a robbery and murder that mimicked that of Rice and Brown's, but this one was at a small store in Louisiana. That's not the only story of murder associated with Budville. Doing research for the book Murder and Mayhem on Route 66, Murder and Mayhem on the Main Street of America, Tales from Bloody 66, I came across some really dark and fascinating stories, more for those with morbid curiosity, such as myself. On January 10th, 1956, Ralph Henderson Rainey, a 46-year-old butcher from Santa Monica, was found dead along Route 66, a short distance west of Budville. He'd been shot twice in the head. Weeks later, an incident in Las Vegas, Nevada, led to the arrest of Rainey's killer and unveiled a string of murders all along Route 66 and in Nevada. Shortly before dawn on January 23, 1956, Police Sergeant Dick Barber was on duty in North Las Vegas near the Nellis Air Force Base. He stopped a Buick with California plates that he estimated had been traveling at more than 70 miles per hour. The driver, a man of about 35 with wavy brown hair, responded politely when asked for his driver's license, which identified him as Kenneth Short of Burbank, California. Unbeknownst to Officer Barber, Kenneth Short was listed as a missing person, last seen in Tucumcari, New Mexico. Then, without warning, the driver of the Buick fled the scene and Barber pursued at high speed. On College Street, the driver of the Buick lost control, rolled the sedan, crawled from the wreckage, and vanished into the residential neighborhood. Soon a massive manhunt was underway, but the driver had taken shelter and a hostage in the home of Lauren Tracy. For several days, the driver eluded police, but on January 24th, the man who had identified himself as Kenneth Short was apprehended in Caliente, Nevada. By this time, police had learned that the real Kenneth Short was an electrical engineer who had purchased a brand new Buick in Michigan in early January and headed west to meet his wife, Mira, in San Francisco. He had been due to arrive on January 21st. In Caliente, the mysterious driver introduced himself as Samuel Stewart and claimed that he suffered from amnesia. When pressed during interrogation in Las Vegas, he said, "I got this damned amnesia. Now, I recall finding this car of Short's parked in the hamlet of Santa Rosa, New Mexico. Any papers you found in it must have been there when I drove off." On January 26, the FBI reported that Samuel Stewart was actually David Cooper Nelson, whose lengthy record included 6 years served in the Montana State Prison for armed robbery. Additionally, his fingerprints matched those found in Ralph H. Rainey's blood-spattered abandoned car. Agents then discovered that Nelson had cashed traveler's checks belonging to Short in Law, Utah, and Santa Rosa, New Mexico. Nelson steadfastly stuck to his claim of amnesia until February 6. Though he would later recant the confession, Nelson outlined a trail of murder through several states. Rainey had picked him up hitchhiking near Flagstaff, Arizona, on January 9th. They later argued, according to Nelson's testimony, over his refusal to drive, and Rainey ordered him from the car near Grants, New Mexico. Quote, "I reached in the back seat and took my gun from the suitcase. Then I took over the wheel and put the gun between my legs. At one point, Rainey reached over for the gun and I hit him in the wrist with a judo blow. I told him not to goof off again. Later, he reached for the gun again, and I used a judo blow and hit him across the nose with the edge of my hand. Then I got a little mad, and, well, I shot him in the head. I guess I had driven about 15 miles when Rainey moaned, 'Why did you do it?' And then I fired the second shot." While making the confession, Nelson was unaware that police had recovered the .38 caliber revolver used to murder Rainey. And when confronted with evidence of his involvement with the murder of Short, Nelson again claimed amnesia. Then, as with Rainey, a few days later, he launched into a rambling confession about killing Short west of Tucumcari and the dumping the body in an arroyo along U.S. 66. Kenneth Short had picked up Nelson hitchhiking near Sepulpa, Oklahoma. Some 25 miles west of Amarillo, they parked the car on a farm road. Nelson slept in the front seat, Short in the back. Nelson said, quote, "I overpowered Short while he was sleeping. I tied his hands in front of him. He opened his eyes and asked what I was doing. I told him I needed the car. He did what I said. Nothing would happen to him. Then I thought, well, they can't hang me any higher for two than they can for one. So I shot him in the back of the head with the 38. Nelson dropped another bombshell and said, quote, "And I also killed a fellow named John Valente on January 4th. Police listened intently to his story as Valente had been found in the bathroom of his home in Pioche, Nevada on January 5th. Investigators had been working to determine if his death was murder or suicide. Before the trial for the Rainey murder, Nelson disavowed his confessions. Then at his first trial, Nelson maintained an insanity defense, but after evaluation was found sane and guilty. And at the second trial, the confessions were disallowed, but he was again found guilty. And after his conviction, before pronouncement of a death sentence, Nelson tried to escape from prison. Prior to his execution, he requested the warden Cox provide two prisoners in the cells next to his with special meals after his deaths. Nelson was executed in the gas chamber at 12:20 on August 11th, 1960. Another little dark tale from the book Murder and Mayhem on the Main Street of America, Tales from Bloody 66. Sure changes your perspective about the Main Street of America, but here in the era of Renaissance, we have a tendency to think of Route 66 as neon and tail fins, and we forget that it was once it was a highway. It was a corridor of commerce, legal and illegal, and it was a busy highway. Here in western Arizona, for example, on the section through Oatman, the Arizona Department of Transportation, in 1 year, 1939, clocked 1 million vehicles entering from outside of Arizona. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this story. If you have ideas, I'd sure like to hear from you. If you're an author, artist, small business owner, community developer, event organizer, any of the above, and you'd like to have a few minutes in the spotlight to promote your works, well, give me a holler. We're looking for good guests, exciting guests, and guests that spark some curiosity and interest. Hey, we'd like to give a shout out to a few of our sponsors today. We mentioned Tucumcari, New Mexico. I'd like to mention them again, but for a good reason. Tucumcari, New Mexico is more than just a living Route 66 time capsule with neon lit motels and trading post. Mesa Lands Community College Dinosaur Museum is a must-see attraction. And don't miss the Railroad Depot. With its wonderful museum. And of course, the Route 66, the Convention Center, with its wonderful Route 66 museum. And while you're in town, may I suggest the Roadrunner Lodge? A little bit of 1960s swank, if you will. David Brenner, Amanda Brenner have put together an incredible living time capsule. It's as close as you're going to get to time travel, but without sacrificing all the modern amenities you've come to expect. Hey, thank you again, folks, for joining me. We'll do this again tomorrow with another tale from Route 66. And, until we meet again, my friends, vaya con Dios. Adios.
Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.